hold the silence, but we don't dare speak. There's a wall between us and a river so deep. We keep pretending that there's nothing wrong. There's a cold of silence and it can't go on.
Hi, I'm Alan Watt. This is Cutting Through the Matrix on Friday the 12th of February 2010. As always, I suggest to the newcomers, and sure there are newcomers coming in all the time, to look into cuttingthroughthematrix.com website. Scroll down, bookmark all the other sites you see that I have up there, these are the official sites, and bookmark them for future use. That way, when the big ones stop me uploading, which I do once in a while, while they sort out their strange technical problems, you can always get the latest shows for download. And it's a good idea, too, to try these alternate sites sometimes. If you find there's a sticking on download, it's generally because everyone goes into the com. There's too many going into the com at the same time. So there's cuttingthroughthematrix.com, there's .net, .us, .ca, there's Alan Watt, cuttingthroughthematrix.ca, there's cuttingthrough.jenkness.com, and there's Alan Watt, sentient.sentinel.eu. Now, the last one is the European site. It has all the same audios for download, but it's got the addition of transcripts for Prince Up of a lot of the talks I've given in the past, and you can choose from a variety of languages from all over the world. And the tin can moment, it's a tin can moment. I don't give you many all through the show. It's just one at the start, so I'm different from everybody else. That stops you from getting upset, but it also, unfortunately, helps you forget by the end of the show. But it's up to you to keep me going, because I'm probably the only person out there who's not backed by a foundation, as you can tell by my website, and I'm not backed by any big corporation to sell their products. I don't get money from advertisers. That's how most hosts rake in their cash. They bring them on as guests. They're backed by them, and they push their whatever they sell. The ads you hear on this show are paid directly by the advertisers to RBN to broadcast the show, to pay for their the airtime, to pay for their satellite upload and all the rest of the broadcasting, and the staff and their bills. We all get the bills coming in. So it's up to you to keep me going, and you can do so by buying the books I have for sale and the discs I have for sale on my website, cuttingthroughthematrix.com, or you can donate to me. Now remember, personal checks are good from the U.S. to Canada. From the U.S. to Canada, you can also use international postal money orders. That's one with a pinkish border at the top. Don't come out with a green one. That's internal U.S. only. So you want the international postal money order and get that at your post office if you don't like going through the banks. You can also use MoneyGram, Western Union, or cash. Some people also order through PayPal, which you can also donate through. If you want to order something through PayPal, just give me a separate email along with the payment from PayPal, and I'll get whatever it is you want out to you. Outside the Americas, same deal. A lot of people across the world use Western Union, MoneyGram, or cash, or PayPal. So you've got a big choice there on how to get to me. Those who get the discs burned and passed to them because they don't like using computers, but they play them on their CD players, you can get in touch with me at Alan Watt, W-A-T-T, Site 41, Box 4, Estaire, which is E-S-T-A-I-R-E, Ontario, Canada. Postal code is P as in Peter, 3, E as in Elizabeth, 4, N as in Nora, 1, P, 3, E, 4, N, 1. And people should be really careful with those postal codes because they're so sticky now. Just one letter out or a number out and they get thrown into a frenzy of absolute dumbness. They don't know what to do about it, even if the rest of the address is there. And they know where Austere is and Ontario is. By God, they just can't move the pulse through. It's astonishing. Be back with more after this break.
This is RBN, The Republic Broadcasting Network.
Hi, folks. This is Alan Watts, and we're cutting through the matrix. A lot of young people email me every other day. There's someone else with so many questions, because, and it's quite understandable, naturally, because they've gone through the intense indoctrination, socialization, they call it, the school process. They're getting trained to be social creatures under scientific guidance, supposedly. And yet, I think a lot of the students know that there's just something wrong with everything. They can't really pinpoint any exact thing, just sort of everything. And that's generally the first thing that you experience when you're waking up to this world that you've been trained to see in a certain way, with all of its media and its educational system. You just know there's something wrong about it. And you see the natural injustices. Children see natural injustices so quickly and easily, but what they can't tell are the various reasons for those injustices. Therefore, they can be given the wrong reasons for them, and whoever gets the blame, those children will start blaming you as well. That's how they use the ecological indoctrination of their religion in school to show that the big boys are the bad boys. But what they don't tell them is that the big boys want the controlled society, the controlled world. The big boys never lose. When the UN takes over a biosphere, for instance, well, guess what? So under the UN treaties, the big corporations get the first dibs. They go in and mine or whatever else it's supposed to do. It actually cuts out all competition for the favorite ones at the top. It's like free trade, too. Free trade is not free trade for every little corporation or company. It's really a restrictive trade to do with the big boys. They get, so the big international corporations can have unrestricted free trade. Everything has a double meaning. It's double think, in fact, we live in, where nothing really is as it seems to be. Definitely, it's never as it's presented to the public. So the idea to train youth for the upcoming generation, the upcoming lifestyle that they will be trained into with these changes, that started very early in school. That was the old Marxian idea. Bypass the older ones who have a bit of wisdom. They've caught on to the cons that go on in life with politicians. They've found out eventually that it'll take 20 years before the truth of any major event is given to the public, which is generally vastly different from the reasons given at the time. So rather than trying to brainwash all the adults, you always go for the youth and program them for the changes they are planned to experience in their lifetime and accept it as always quite natural and normal. It's no coincidence they used sociologists and psychologists and behavioral psychologists to minutely study the dictatorships of the past to see why it worked so well and the types of people that it affected, who were the really ardent followers. They found the same thing with some religions, early religions. It was the youth who were idealistic. It's those ones that you go for. And, of course, dictators also know that that's what you go for. You appeal directly to the youth, and they will worship you like a movie star or a pop star, whatever. And that's what you do. You build up an image of that person as superhuman, and they looked up to, admired. I watched a documentary not long ago that someone sent me on a disc, because I can't watch anything on the video here because of ExploreNet's cutting me back all the time until I'm crawling. I'm paying the same price for high speed, which I never get. But anyway, some people send me discs of things, and there was one of China, a very good documentary in different sections, going through the phases of the communist regime in China with Mao Zedong, and how he was worshipped by teenagers when he was an old man. And it's the same phenomenon where one young girl said that she shook his hand, and he showed her when she was young shaking his hand, and she said she never washed that hand for about a week because it touched the famous, this godlike creature. phenomenon which was used. Same thing with Elvis Presley. He used to wipe the sweat off his brow and toss the handkerchiefs into the audience, and they'd fight to get it. They'd fight to get it. I think one of them enclosed in a glass case, so it would always contain that sweat, you know. That's what you see with people who want to worship people. So this technique and this phenomena is used to its maximum in school, where the youngsters are given their ecological heroes, like Al Gore. You elevate a person up. If you've got to elevate a person up on the world stage, a stage that you must understand in show business is understood to be an altar. It's an altar. You're up there above the rest. You're elevated on the altar. And a lot of forces come into play when youngsters and older people see someone elevated up on that stage. That they're unaware of these forces, but they stem from religious forces as well. And very archaic methods of behavior we automatically fall into. So therefore, they give you the heroes to follow. And when that hero speaks, whatever he said will be taken as the absolute gospel truth by the youngsters. And that's why, to see Al Gore and others, an ex-vice president who always reminds the children, I'm ex-vice president. That's like saying that I was the right-hand man to the Messiah. Literally is to a child. And that technique is used to the advantage of those who brainwash the up-and-coming youth into a stage that they will never listen to any parents, they'll never listen to any other opinion, any contrary opinion, and they'll be devout and even fanatical followers that will come out of them, carry on the agenda. Beria talked about this. Beria was the head of the NKVD in the Soviet Union in the early days. And in 1934, at the International Communist Meeting, the Comintern, where the communist parties from all over the world went to attend, he said that it used to take a generation to indoctrinate what we call today setting a trend in motion, like a meme, and it flows and flows and gathers momentum like a wave. It used to take 70 years, he said, a generation, that's what every class is, a generation then, to introduce the planned change that would manifest like a wave in 70 years' time. He said, now, this is in 34, with scientific indoctrination through schooling, we can introduce changes every 5 year, major changes, because it already worked in the categories of age groups in turn. And he said, eventually, we'll be able to change them much quicker, introduce them even every year, maybe even in months. Well, we're at that phase today. With scientific indoctrination, like any big script, where you introduce 5 year plans, 10, 15, 20, and so on, with every induction of kindergarten children, what they're getting taught is a little bit more advanced as to what they will experience in their lifetime than the ones who were inducted a year before. It's that precise. That's what Bertrand Russell talks about in Education and the Good Life, one of the books that he wrote about for the World Socialist Controlled Society. It's quite fascinating, and people are unaware of it. They're unaware of the, like Bernays talks about, the unconscious factors which motivate them. But those who understand those unconscious factors can manipulate you like a puppet. So your behavior, your mannerisms, the terminology you'll pick up and use automatically, to the opinions that you will get into arguments over and literally be angry, you might ever fight over them, and they're not even your own. You won't even come to that understanding. That's the incredible macabre beauty of these sciences. They're very effective. Most people don't get their opinions through logical, critical thinking. If you use logical, critical thinking, you will question all data given through schooling and elsewhere to see if it follows a logical pattern. Very few folk will do that today. We're downloaded, just like that osmosis, really. We learn by osmosis. It's given to us. It sinks down the levels of propaganda into us, and we parrot. And because we are a social creature, as they all know, the people don't like to be different from other people. Even the rebels in society, the youth who are trying to find their identity, you see the ones who want to adapt and go for the good careers. I used to call them mods many years ago, the mods, the moderns, because that's what they were called, those who believed in the modernistic view of society, like H.G. Wells, long before the mods came along. And the rockers, the ones who were the rebels and didn't drive on scooters, they drove on motorbikes and wore leather, and they were the bad boys. Even the uniforms that you wear to be bad are given to you by the same people who design your culture industry, your drama, your entertainment, your music, and as I say, right down to the fashion and the fashionable way to dress, to rebel. I used to laugh when you see them with the baggy pants and hats on backwards, and wherever you went, you'd see this. They showed you a documentary years ago on television where you'd see the same thing all the way to Africa, because people were falling into the classification of how they identified with. They didn't realize this is all given to you. All given to you. The same techniques, you understand, were used when dictators come into power. Hitler had his brown shirts. They were the bad boys. Everybody was terrified of the bad boys. You know. Again, as I say, the Bernays of this world and different ones understand all these techniques perfectly. And it's far deeper than even Bernays expounded to the public. He knew far more. He'd been taught by experts long, long before him, from childhood, by the way. And there are whole massive departments working for governments. We'll see him back with more after this break.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Hi folks, I'm Alan Watt, and this is Cutting Through the Matrix. I generally don't plan anything, say at night, it just comes to me, and I had these ideas just tossing around in my head, just waiting for the call to start the show, and it's so evident to me how generations are used in turn for the pre-planned agenda, something that was written a long time ago, and you really do come to understand you're living through a script. Incredible propaganda powers are used, and have been used my whole life long before me, to guide this world along a planned path to this sort of collectivist socialist society run by the big elitists at the top, the richest people on the planet. And that's what's so deceptive for people who've been indoctrinated in particular doctrines such as communism and fascism and so on. They don't realize that they're all funded from the same source. And the system they're bringing in, and I've got articles here from some of the big boys, it is a collectivist system. Look into the Club of Rome. They talk about it. They preferred, after looking at all the systems that were used across the world in history, they preferred the collectivist system. They're talking about a socialist system where the state makes all your decisions for you. Some of them have actually said that, like Astor Kessler. He said that you won't need to think anymore. The state will be making all your decisions for you. Well, we were already there with so many government agencies and more expanding all the time and being created all the time to take more powers away from the average person. And from birth to death in a socialist co-controlled society, you'll be run with a massive bureaucracy. And above all this collectivist socialist system, you'll have the ultra-elite living, the richest people on the planet, and a completely different lifestyle than you could ever even imagine, beyond your imagination. And let's understand that to see where all this is being, where we're all being led, and for all the followers that help it along without even realizing where it's going. They think they do. That's the beauty of indoctrination in the big con. You think you know where it's going because you've been trained to think that. And you become the bitterest enemy of the totalitarian regime once it's there, as you find out that your utopia hasn't actually materialized, and that's when they come down and smash you. That's how the Soviets did it. They used what they called the ultra-liberals. They're always talking about more and more freedoms, more liberty, etc. They used them to bring down countries, and once the Soviets took over, they eliminated those ones because they were the biggest problem. They were the ones who were used to standing up and shouting and yelling for we want rights and so on. And once they got the system in, it was all to destroy the idealistic system, the idealism that you had in you of what your nation is. That's what the liberals were used for, to destroy all the premises that you stood for. And it gave you an idealistic idea of your country. Destroy the idealism, destroy the culture, and then that you bring in the Sovietized world, Sovietized system, by the way, and then you destroy those liberals who led it, because they won't be happy when they realize they're going to be run by the big boot in the face, as George Orwell called it. And now, there's a caller on the line, and it's Charles from Toronto. I think I'll take him now. Is Charles there?
Yes, Alan. How are you this evening?
Not too bad.
Got a couple of questions for you on religion and mind control. The first one is there a book or series of books that describe the elite's religion? You have many times said that it is some ways like Hinduism.
Well, it is, in fact, very much like Hinduism. And remember, you can't put all of the elite into the same basket. They're allowed to really believe as a side issue in other areas or other types of religions. Their main religion together is one of superiority through a Darwinistic determination. That's their main one. They're allowed to go further than that in their own little ways if they want to, as a harmless distraction, you might say. But they believe firmly that, and H.G. Wells wrote about this in his two books, The Outline of History. He classified the different categories of people into eugenic settings and levels for inferior, mediocre, etc., all the way up to superior. And the ones who've got up there through whatever means possible, they don't care actually if they slaughtered their way up, through, like the old feudal families, or if they got up through counting the money, be very, very shrewd, or ripping folk off, as long as they got up there and then became respectable. Right. And held on to that power that money brings you for at least three or four generations, by Darwinian standards, you have proven your right to rule the lessers, the ones. And that's what they mean by that, too. They say that what they've said in some of their books is that the evolutions and at the present state of or condition of humanity took place a long time ago, and therefore they are obviously the ones who had jumped through the great jump or the great they crossed over the great divide. They jumped to a higher standard of evolution than the rest of the peasantry. So they promote it. Now, when you go into Darwinism, Darwin starts off with the amoebas, the slime and all the rest of it, with its innate need to evolve into something better and bigger and all the rest of it. That's based on Hinduism, because when you go into the religion of Hinduism, they also have the same philosophy, that everything started with slime and eventually little living matter came out of it and evolved and evolved and evolved. That's the whole theory of the Brahmanistic worldview. Yeah.
Great. I've got a second question for you. I hear the music.
Yeah, hold on. The music's there, and I'll come back after this break.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Hi, folks. This is Alan Watt, and we're cutting through the matrix, talking to Charles from Toronto. Are you still there, Charles?
Yes, Alan. My second question is, religion, I agree, over the long haul is used to control people and goes back for many ages. But in your opinion, are the originators of the religions in on the scam, or are they divinely inspired?
I can tell you one thing. From Blavatsky, Madame Blavatsky, in the 1800s onwards,
yep.
There's no doubt
Sure, I agree.
They were put there. They were put there to create a new religion. In fact, she said in her own book that her job, or the job of Theosophy, which is a blend of Freemasonry, and yes, she was given a Masonic charter, by the way, eventually, to exist in, as Theosophy. She said their job is to prepare the future for a blending of the Eastern religion. She meant India primarily, with that of the West. And she said also that their ultimate goal was to blend spirit with science, with science, which is a very interesting statement, because when you we're in an age now where they're talking about brain interfaces and chips and all the rest of it, I think this is a very old plan, and they had incredible faith in science in the 1800s. They really believed that they would become godlike. And when you look at H.G. Wells's Things to Come, and the movies especially show that too. In the movies, there's even a race of scientists who see themselves as, again, more evolved than the peasants all down below. And that's all to do with the evolutionary theory of Darwin once again. Now, people in all areas of the world have religions and always have had religions, because we are, as people, human beings, religious people. Part of it is the need to reach out to something which you know or you suspect is there, because no theory explains the wonders of everything at all. There's no theory out there can do it. Even Darwin admitted that with all the knowledge they had and all the theories that they had, if they took books and books and books of all these theories, including his own, threw them into a laboratory, an eye still not would make itself from all those books. So, but that was an intent of Darwinism. And Darwinism was a deliberate intent, pre-planned again, to destroy the existing religion, to bring in a secularized society where we would be obedient to the new scientific gurus as gods. And that was what happened. Remember, Charles Darwin's grandfather also wrote a book about evolution. His father did as well. Darwin himself, belonging to the Royal Society, was eventually put forward, and he used all of Wallace's theories, and it's now admitted. The Royal Society now give Wallace equal credence with Darwin. He should have been at the head, because Darwin took all of his theories to put them forward. But the intent, as I say, was to elevate science over religion for an age of what they called reason, also for an age where those with the proper intelligence, the proper breeding, would guide society rather than this wishy-washy way that they claimed that the religions had run peoples before. So regardless, though, people always have a need to look beyond this. The scientists will always come out and tell you, especially the Darwinists, that it's our inability to explain the phenomena of the universe and their own existence that forms the need in us to look for an answer within religion. That's their way of downplaying it. But with all their theories, it's amazing, even with medicine, for instance. 100 years ago, you'd be bled for anything that was wrong with you.
Right.
Maybe even for hemorrhage, they'd bleed you. Whatever was wrong with you, they'd bleed you. And it was all quackery. Same in veterinary science. They have fantastic potions that they brew in front of you and mix some copper sulfate and watch wonderful stuff fizz and change color. And that's what impressed you. But really what it did for you was pretty well nothing, although it might kill you. We've seen marketing elevate pharmacology to an incredible degree, where every drug that comes out is the wonder drug. Prozac did that too. There was millions went into the marketing of it. Every paper ran with it, because they all look for the scientists as the new gods to give us all the cures. Well, they haven't given us a cure for anything.
Yes, it's just it's a lot of confusion. Even the scientists, if you listen to them today, say that quantum theory is so complicated that nobody can understand it. So it's beyond the realm of understanding. So
that's right. And even Hawkins came out and says and said that Einstein didn't even understand all of the theories that were up to make the quantum theory. So in other words, it's how many angels can stand on the head of a pin. It's back to the same thing. There's no difference with the scientists. They go through their fads, and then they leave their fads behind as they get a new theory or fad given to them. And this is amazing with science and medicine too, is they keep changing their minds about things and tossing theories out, but never saying they were wrong. By the way, like the IPCC at the UN, they never say they're wrong. They just quietly stop mentioning one part that's come to disgrace and carry on as though nothing has happened. That's the nature of professions that take over. Now, any religion that's existed in the past on a tribal level generally was part of the social structure as well. It gave people the rules so they could live, they could cope with each other without killing each other in close confinement often, and got them through the tough times. When religion becomes formalized into institutions over generations, then, and you get the same generations of elite going into them at the head, then it becomes corrupt, obviously, like any government. Any government, too, even that starts off with great intentions, becomes corrupt in about the second, third generation. That's
it attracts the wrong kind of people, people who want control. The thing that always impressed me about spirit and science is I would suggest the three greatest scientific minds of the last 500 years would be Leonardo da Vinci, Sir Isaac Newton, and Albert Einstein, and all of them had a deep belief in God.
I wouldn't believe in them at all, to be honest with you.
Really, huh?
No, not at all. I mean, Einstein was classified, and this is the history books, as a dummy at school.
Yes.
His parents were very wealthy in Switzerland. They got him a job in the patenting department. And the patenting department is there not to just put patents through. But as you know, the war industry runs everything. And anybody could come up with a good idea, was to actually steal their ideas. And his reward for being a good person in that department and passing stuff on to his bosses was to be, we'll make you a famous scientist. He never gave a lecture publicly at all, and everybody who interviewed him, including C.P. Snow, said all he ever talked about was international Zionism and a world run by scientific elitism. That's how it should be. He couldn't discuss anything without his notes there on a scientific basis.
Interesting. Yeah,
he's back into the other ones too, Isaac Newton.
Yep.
I mean, the guy was quite the character. He never left Cambridge, you know. He didn't like women at all. He was bringing over, I think it was Fabio from Italy to live with, and he cracked up at the last minute in case of the scandal it would cause. When you had to eventually, when he died and they emptied out his rooms, he was into alchemy and Kabbalah. That's where he was getting everything from, all his ideas, Kabbalah.
Interesting. Yeah, the last 4 years,
these guys were not Christians by any possible means. And I also think it's very, very true, like Jack Zatali said, Jack Elol said, he said the idea of bringing forth famous people, whether it's actors or scientists, to give opinions on political venues, he said, is no different than bringing forth your plumber, your carpenter, or the person who rings the till at your grocery store, because they know no more about it than they do.
Right.
We're more enthralled by their status than their knowledge.
Well, thanks for calling. You would say the three of them.
Thanks for calling, and I'll go on to the next caller. There's Vince from London. Are you there, Vince?
Hi there.
Yes.
Hi, Alan. How you doing?
Not so bad.
Okay. Yeah, Isaac Newton, I'll have to disagree with you on that one.
That's okay.
Well, he created something called laws. I mean, they're actually provable.
Yeah, but he wasn't the first one to come up with these laws, you understand. You understand, it's no different than today. It's who grabs something first, who gets the acclaim for it. The same scandal, as I say, happened exactly.
He was denounced by all his peers, all his contemporaries. I mean, he actually went back and became a bureaucrat because
He wasn't a bureaucrat, and his reward was getting put in charge of the Royal Mint, which was a darn cushy job and very well paid.
I mean, it's a bureaucrat job, though, isn't it? It's not.
He didn't do anything. I mean, it's like getting appointed at the head of some commission, you know. You can understand, every country will elevate the main characters they give you as famous people. What surprises me, too, is when you go into, say, Russia, they were teaching through the Soviet era that so-and-so, Popov, or whoever invented the television set. Another guy was the first guy to fly an aircraft. This character, who's Russian, was the creator of electricity. Every country has this sort of thing going on. Now, it's like 10 years down the road, when they have this whole thing set up and rolling, steamrolling forward with the environment, population reduction,
all
of that kind of stuff.
Well, that's what I call thought.
And then they'll elevate for future generations. Al Gore was the genius behind it. And that's what we taught in the schools, and they'll write, writers come out writing screeds of fantasy about them that become dogma, and that's the reality of the world.
Yeah,
that
but to be fair, I mean, they call Newton's theories are called laws. I mean, they're the laws of motion, they're laws of gravity, because, you know, they don't call global warming a law. I mean, it's soft science. But you shouldn't even really call them theories, you know. In truth, they're just hypotheses, you know.
It's not even a hypothesis. You see, it's an agenda.
Well, it's just an idea.
It's an agenda. The idea of what's happening today was dreamed up by commissions and committees at the Club of Rome
back in the early
70s.
Yeah.
And they wrote about it in their own book. They take a claim for coming up with this idea.
Yeah, but I wouldn't throw out the baby with the bathwater, you know. I mean, there is hard science and there's soft science, you know, you have to discriminate there.
But you understand, science is like, which doctor do you want to believe in, you see? I mean, that's what it is. That's what science is. But right now, that's exactly where science... We haven't been a scientific society for very long.
I know, but there
we don't know enough to make these incredible statements.
You know, there are television sets and there are the internet. You know,
but what they do have,
real things.
What we do have are big, massive foundations putting up multi-billions of bucks to bring in a planned society, a planned future, using the guise of global warming to bring it around and to make us give up rights, freedoms, and all that, to change our behavior. And, as I say, the Club of Rome is a top think tank for the UN. In their own book, the founders wrote their own book on it called The First Global Revolution, and they published it in the 1990s, and in there they said that they were given the task of finding a way to unite the whole world under a common cause, going in a common direction.
Yeah, into
a collective
society. Absolutely, I'm certainly with you on that one. I mean,
and they came up with the idea of global warming.
Yeah.
Famine.
Well, I think most of us know that by now. I mean, the things that I'm interested in that I wanted to bring up were things that don't really get talked about, you know, I don't know, I've just been a bit bothered the last couple of weeks. I mean, there's actually something you said about Abraham Lincoln talking to Karl Marx or something.
Well, it's not don't blame me for saying something that's the congressional records in the U.S. But Karl Marx actually...
But it just triggered something off, you know. I was just like, well, you know...
Karl Marx did telegraph Lincoln
on stage
and congratulates him for defeating the South, because one of the planks of the manifesto was a strong, basically totalitarian, centralized government, and Lincoln had established and achieved that. Before Lincoln, they didn't have this incredibly powerful centralized government. In fact, the Confederation had so many things written into the Constitution, the Confederation...
That's what I wanted to talk about.
Yeah.
I'll get to the nitty-gritty. It's this thing called the Constitution, because we know that everything is falling apart. I mean, we can see it's happening here in Britain. So, I mean, there's nothing here on the radio or that I can find, so I tend to listen to everything in America.
Uh-huh.
And all I ever hear is the same thing, Constitution. We've got to get back to the Constitution on here. Oh, you know, we get Ron Paul in and everything. We get back and everything will be right and then we'll be great again, you know, all this kind of thing. And it's just winding me up, basically. And can we just talk about the Constitution? Because you can Google it and you get a picture of it.
Yeah.
You know, and it says there in massive letters, "We the people."
Yeah.
I mean, is that a collectivist statement or what? You know, like...
It's supposed to be a collectivist to the extent that for the first time in history, again, this is the standard version I'm giving you. For the first time in history where they'd actually sat down and wrote out a charter of rights, basically, along with the Bill of Rights. Now, the Bill of Rights came for the ordinary folk who protested. The founding fathers were going with you. Like I said, there's a difference between a rebellion and a revolution. In a revolution, you have a pre-planned agenda using revolt first, But you also know who you're going to take the revolt through stages into a new society, which is then revolutionary, you see. Most of them will rebel and then go back. That's the history of even Britain with the levellers and the peasants' revolts and all the rest of it. They wanted to go back to a time when things were better, a little bit better than the unbearable situation they'd come to. The founding fathers of America, once they had won or been granted their independence, basically, wanted to copy, model it on almost a British system, including how much land you could have.
Kick out the British and then put in a British system. It doesn't make sense.
Yeah, exactly. So really, and people have really questioned that, but they'd simply bring in another appendage of Britain under a guise. But really, yeah, because initially Washington and these guys didn't think the ordinary person had the intellect or educational capacity to make the correct kind of vote. And so they wanted you to own X amount of land before you even had the right to vote or run for Congress. And there's a big law to do about that. People don't realize there were rebellions right after that within the United States in some places as folks saw what was coming and what was getting set up. So, in a sense, the U.S. went back, whereas the French Revolution, which again was a collectivist revolution with an agenda and with people behind it at the top who knew they were going to bring it into a true revolution from a rebellion into what became the basis of the communistic socialistic system. And that's what Karl Marx studied. But the U.S., as I say, at one point even wrote to the descendants of the Stuart dynasty, who it was in Italy at the time, asking if he was maybe interested in being the king. He even thought of making him the king of America. You know. But thanks for calling. I'll be back after this break.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Hi, folks. This is Alan Watt, and we're cutting through the matrix. And we've got Maggie from Texas on the line. You're there, Maggie. Hello, Maggie.
Hello, Alan.
Yes.
The other day, I listened to a guest on another program, and he was combining space-age flying saucer-type technology with alien stories and wrapping it all in religion, and he went on and on about aliens, good aliens, bad aliens, real aliens, false aliens, robot aliens, you know.
And illegal aliens.
Oh, no, he did not mention those.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, he went on long beyond the point where ordinarily I just flipped the channel, but because he was also talking about religion, Old Testament and earlier, I kept listening for a while thinking maybe I could learn something of value, and I decided to ask you, since you are a scholar of religion, first, what do you really think of this aliens idea? Who do you believe was the first to introduce it in religion, identifying them as specifically as travelers from space or from the stars? And what do you think inspired that story? In other words, was it made of...
I'll tell you, it's quite good because John Dewey was the first one to say that in a major speech.
Really?
John Dewey, yeah.
Right,
he said if you just... remember the whole thing was collectivist world plan society.
Yes, yeah.
Around the time of the League of Nations. And he said if we could only show that we were getting invaded with an external extraterrestrial enemy, the world would come together and unite as one. Another person who said it was Lester B. Pearson. And Lester B. Pearson became the Prime Minister of Canada. He was also the head of the UN at one point. He drafted up the UN Charter with Alger Hiss.
Well, are you saying that there is no precedent for it in ancient religion? Because this guy was coming up with stuff out of
Daniel. No, I'll tell you what. They started with Eric von Daniken.
Yes.
He came out. He was launched a long time ago by David Frost. And Eric von Daniken eventually was exposed with all these space aliens and stuff. And the guy on this sort of cosmic motorcycle and all this stuff. He was churning. Chariots of the Gods was his first one. He was exposed because a British journalist sent, he went over to South America, Mexico, found the guy that was making all these stelas that Daniton was claiming were ancient. He was only paying the guy ten pesos each, you know, for this. And making a fortune, so he was a con man. They never stopped this stuff, but here's what Lester B. Pearson said from the United Nations, 1957. I got it from the original paper here, by the way, the Globe and Mail. It says, perhaps there is a hopeful possibility here in the conquest of outer space. It says, interplanetary activity may well give us planetary peace. Once we discover Martian spaceships hovering over Earth's space, we will all come together. And we will say, how dare they threaten us like this? We shall shout as one at a really United Nations. That's Canadian diplomat Lester Pearson, Nobel Peace Prize lecturer given in December 57. He drafted up the constitution for the UN with Alger Hiss and became Prime Minister of Canada.
Right. Okay, so do you think then, you think that the people who are coming up with this stuff are disinformation agents?
I would say absolutely so. Plus, it's a good way to rake in the cash from the people who want that kind of stuff. Yeah.
I have heard some people suggest that the giants in the earth of the Old Testament might have been thought of as space aliens. Is that so or is that not so?
Well, when we see the big, massive scale, remember, there's one born every minute, and the guy who said that made an artificial one, took it on a circus tour, and made lots of money. It was made of wax. Back with Monday night, I'm hanging myself into your Canada. It's good night to me, your God or your God's goal with your past.